Very good. Today's Dhamma talk. Exciting, isn't it? Only I told you last night what today's Dhamma talk's going to be. Even though things are uncertain, I decided to keep what I said as a promise. And I'm going to talk today about loving kindness. Especially in its context as a meditation technique, and how it can be used together with other techniques, and eventually those effects not just lead to being more kind, more accepting of other people, but also how you can use that to be more kind and accepting of things, of life, and thereby get to a greater sense of more peacefulness in your existence, more contentment, more freedom. So today's talk is on loving kindness, and that loving kindness metta is one of those meditations, as well as meditation on the breath and meditation on your good qualities, your generosity, your sila, on Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. The metta is right in there along with all of those. Usually in one's experience that people's meditations objects, the ones which are really powerful, the most powerful is always the breath, but close behind number two is usually metta, loving kindness. And many people do take that loving kindness, that metta, as their main object of meditation. Put it in front of the breath and practice loving kindness as their path into deep states of peacefulness and quietness, even more so than the breath. But nevertheless, that I would add here that the same skills which create success in loving kindness, if you apply to the breath, they should create the same success with loving kindness, and vice versa. If you can do the breath meditation, you can do loving kindness. If you can do loving kindness, you can do the breath, because they both follow the same sort of course of letting go, of slowing down, of learning contentment, embracing as a way of gaining peace in one's mind. So in particular, like loving kindness, overcome that second hindrance of ill will. I was mentioning on the talk on hindrances, that ill will goes very deep into one's mind and creates obstacles at all levels. It can be not just ill will towards the person sitting next to you, or the boss who's many thousands of miles away. It can be ill will towards yourself, which says that I'm not good enough to be peaceful, I don't deserve happiness. Or it can be ill will towards the meditation object itself, which means that you actually have to grab onto that meditation object because the mind doesn't want to go, doesn't want to be there. And so loving kindness can become a very skillful means of overcoming some of the deepest of hindrances. However, sometimes people find it very difficult to do loving kindness. And again, whenever we do any of these meditations, we should ask ourselves, why? Why is it difficult? What is the obstacle? Because if you can do breath meditation, the same skill should be able to allow you to do loving kindness meditation, and vice versa. So if you come to an obstacle, stand back, get some insight. What is the obstacle there? Why can't you do loving kindness meditation? Again, when I was a young monk, just newly ordained, I thought loving kindness meditation was only for the namby pamby cream puff monks, not for real monks, not for the tough ones. That's a sort of true stop. And you wanted to kill the defilement, meditate on the breath, and none of this stuffy stuff. But of course, it was to make such a big thing of in monastic life that you had to actually chant loving kindness every evening and every morning. And do this chant, may all beings be happy and well, may all beings be free from suffering, may all beings. Now first of all, you just went along with this because everyone else was doing it. But then actually you decided, well, there must be something in this, so you tried it. Now see, I've told this story to many people before. When I started doing this, and may all beings be happy and well, may all beings, I really started getting into it. I thought, until I caught myself, what I was actually doing, I wasn't saying may all beings, I'd say may all beings except mosquitoes be happy and well. May all beings except mosquitoes be free from suffering, but not those mosquitoes. And this is one of the first things to notice about loving kindness. So if you do loving kindness to all beings, it's so easy to make exceptions. May all beings be happy and well except my husband, my boss, my that person, you know, who lives next door, this person, the person who's snoring in the early morning, this person. And that's, of course, loving kindness never works. It never bites that way. It never really gets deep. Because you can't make those sorts of exceptions. That's a discriminating mind. And the idea of loving kindness is actually to be indiscriminate. It's supposed to be something which removes boundaries rather than creates boundaries. Something which unifies rather than splits up. That's why one of the descriptions of loving kindness is like apamana, means boundless. Sometimes people think boundless means it spreads all over space, but it also means there's no distinction. There's no, on the left of this line, I give loving kindness to those, on the other boundary, on the opposite side of that boundary, I won't. There's no boundaries, no measures, because sometimes before you give loving kindness, you think, does that person deserve loving kindness? That's measuring a person, that's judging them. And loving kindness has to be measureless. Measureless doesn't mean sort of infinite in all directions again. It means you do not draw lines, you do not judge, you do not measure a person's or a being or a thing's worth to receive loving kindness. You just give it to them. So this is actually a completely different attitude of mind which we have to develop. It goes against much of our conditioning of separating things we like with the things we don't like, measuring, you know, what is it we like, is it good enough. It goes against all of that, and we just give loving kindness free. Whether people are hurting us and the mosquitoes are biting us or they're causing us trouble or not. Whether we like it or we don't like it. So you can see from that description that loving kindness actually stops a lot of problems. It stops a lot of business and work having to deal with things you don't like. It stops the problem and all the business associated with ill will, which creates an enormous amount of drain on your time and your resources in your life. How much time do you actually spend sort of dealing with the results of ill will? Arguments, feeling bad about what somebody said, feeling bad about yourself, worrying what you don't like to eat, what you don't like to live, all these ill will towards parts of the body which cause you pain, things that you don't like in life, people dying, you getting sick. Have ill will towards all those things. That creates a huge amount of business in your life. And if you can cut out all that business, it's amazing how much more time you have. Especially how much more freedom you have in your mind. You don't have to think about all those things. Isn't it wonderful if somebody really upsets you that you can just let it go? Say, that's their business, nothing to do with me. If people call you an idiot, call you stupid. They only call you stupid once. If you keep on thinking about it, they call me stupid, they've got no right to call me stupid. If anyone's stupid, they are. You call yourself stupid every time you think about that. 3 times, 4 times, 5 times. That's the problem. They only call you stupid once. Every time you think about it, remember it, worry about it, make it a problem, each time you're calling yourself stupid again. That's the problem with hatred. We sort of take it, put it inside of ourselves, and we cherish it. That's why that you come across the notion that loving kindness is not an easy thing to do. Not because you've got a lot of hatred and ill will to this person or that person, and because you measure that and you judge it as really appropriate, you should give ill will to those people. There's some people who are just so rotten that they really deserve. You really wonder why anyone loves them at all. But when you actually have the courage to let go of that, and it does take courage because, again, there's a lot of fear associated with any type of letting go. And that comes with loving kindness as well. People are afraid to forgive, to let go, and to have no problems in life. We love to hate. That's why if somebody comes up on a soapbox and say, you know, kill the Jews, or kill the Arabs, or kill the Israelis, or kill this people, or kill that people. Why is it that people get sucked in to such racist movements or such negative movements, because people love to hate. You go to sort of football matches or soccer matches or wrestling matches, kill him, kill him, kick him. And if you ever been to things like that, there's a certain amount of enjoyment comes in there. You know, you get sort of involved, it's something to do, you feel part of something, you've got a aim in life. That's why when people go to war, so life becomes so simple. Just kill. So it's hard to get rid of that. There is a sort of attachment, a hatred, a delight in it. If there wasn't, then you wouldn't be hating or angry at people. So loving kindness takes courage and it takes guts to sort of to let go and embrace. So understanding actually what it is, that courage to sort of let go, sort of to let go of all your problems, and that people in Buddhism, obviously in Christianity, we're all owners of our karma. If someone's done something bad, they've said something wrong, they've done the wrong thing by you, they've cheated you, they've stolen from you, whatever they've done from you, you don't need to get angry and punish them. Okay, they do need to be told, but karma will tell them. If they're a Christian, God will tell them. If they're a Muslim, Allah will tell them, or whatever. So leave it up to them. You don't need to be the judge and executioner. It's a nice way of just letting go of other people's bad acts. You don't need to have anger towards them. So you can actually rationalize that it's okay, you can have loving kindness. It's worthwhile. But again, rationalizing is not good enough. Like anything else, to overcome fear, you've got to creep up on it, go so close, go a little bit further, and come back again, go further in. And when you realize how nice it is, how wonderful it is, how freeing it is, then you will actually have the courage to let go of that fear, and to let go of that anger and ill will, let go of all that problem making. This is what it is, problem making, because we like to make problems. And actually get into some loving kindness. So that's why that in Buddhism we have this meditation on loving kindness, because it solves a lot of problems, but also by itself it can, the joy of it, the happiness of it, can be used as a pathway into the jhanas and also a pathway out of samsara, enlightenment. And the way you do this loving kindness meditation is that you use, first of all, present moment awareness, a little bit of silence, just to calm your mind down, because if your mind is thinking all over the place, backwards and forwards about this, that and the other, you cannot focus on anything. Certainly not the loving kindness. So you do need some preparation, like with the breath. Present moment awareness, so you're not thinking about all these things which happened in the past, all the things you've got to do in the future. You're not sort of jabbering to yourself backwards and forwards. So you're sort of reasonably quiet and still. So having done the present moment awareness and the silence, don't need to be perfect on it, then you start the loving kindness meditation. Now somehow or other you've got to sort of develop like a feeling of loving kindness. And there's many ways to do that. You can, I mentioned one way yesterday, not yesterday, the day before I think, when you can actually repeat the words of love. Love, love to yourself. And after you repeated the word, then listen to what it means. So interrupt the silence, but instead of having words about this, that and the other, anything going right and left all over the place, the only speech you have is directed onto the meditation object. It's love. Loving kindness. Compassion. Say those and listen. And you'll start to generate feelings of loving kindness. You may even actually start doing a chant. May all beings be happy and well. May all beings be happy and well. May all beings be happy and well. But one of the troubles with actually going that deep too quickly by saying may all beings is that it might come up, and it often does, it did with me, the mosquito. May all beings, you don't feel that that's appropriate, because there's some beings you think do not deserve your loving kindness. That is natural at this point. I was very disturbed some years ago when There was a big massacre in the Scottish town of Dunblane, where this really crazy man went into this primary school and shot and killed, I think, a number of young toddlers, only 6 or 7 years of age, or 5 years of age, I can't remember what. And I remember reading the papers afterwards, I think the Archbishop of Canterbury or something, you know, the head religious person, you know, in Britain, went on the radio and sort of in the service and implored God not to forgive that man. And that really hit me I was just so disappointed. Because, okay, they did a terrible, 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 terrible thing. But no, love can forgive anything, and it's the best thing to forgive. And it's healing to forgive. It solves problems in the future to forgive, no matter what a person's done. That has the forgiveness. However, it takes, you know, a high-minded person to do that. What really disappointed me, they'd obviously appointed to, you know, the leader of the spiritual church, a person who wasn't that high-minded. And that's what disturbed me. Anyway, because sometimes it's difficult for us to have that unconditional loving kindness towards all beings, sometimes the skillful technique which I used to get around that was to say, well, how can I develop a little bit of loving kindness? You know, just a small bit, just to get started, rather than develop the whole pure, beautiful, boundless thing. So what I did in my meditation, I like cats. Now, even more so than dogs. Dogs are a bit too slobbery. if you know what I mean. And also they're too sort of bouncy sometimes, they jump up at you. But cats are just really sort of cool. Like they're good sort of monk pets because they go around just, they're pretty sort of equanimous a lot of the time. They don't look like they're attached to you. Only when you give them food and you stroke them when they come near you. If you're not going to give them anything, they go somewhere else. So they're sort of nice and equanimous sort of beings, and they sort of move with a sort of mindfulness a lot of the time. I don't keep that first precept. They kill a lot of birds, but you know, you can't be perfect anyway. But I like cats. Okay, so what I did in my meditation was I closed my eyes, kept about awareness and silence, and when I was reasonably quiet, I used imagination to imagine a small kitten, because the young of any species is always more evocative of care, love, protection, or whatever. And I imagined a little kitten, and I gave all the loving kindness and the softness which I possibly could. And I used speech, inner speech, directed speech, not all sorts of things, but just as a way of generating those feelings of loving kindness. I started to imagine that this kitten was a stray. Now, you've seen some of these little kittens who are really strays and no one's fed for days. You know, they're dirty, they've got fleas in them, they haven't eaten, and they're just so scrawny and so scared, and so lonely, and so frightened, and so hungry. I started imagining that. I tried to make it as lonely, as hungry, as thin, as afraid as possible, because just to evoke those feelings of kindness and compassion even more. No matter how dirty that little kitten was, sort of in my imagination I took it into my arms and gave it a hug, a cuddle, and sort of really sort of soothed its fear and sort of promised it from now on it's got a home. And that no matter where you go, what you do, I'll always look after you. Always make sure you get plenty of milk and fish and whatever else you like. So I started playing with this, you know, playing with that softness in my heart towards something which was easy to generate love and kindness towards. And to me that was actually the trick. I had to choose something which was easy to start off with. You don't start off, may I be happy and well. Because as a Westerner, with that sort of conditioning, sometimes you think, do I deserve that? Do I deserve to be happy and well? And of course, sometimes you start thinking about that, actually, no. Because you always start looking at your faults. But with a little animal, a little young animal, who's like a stray, is really needing sort of some home, some care, it was so easy. It was obvious that you had to give love and kindness to that. And so you started generating this feeling of love and kindness. And when I started doing this imaginary exercise of a little kitten, then the feelings of loving kindness will start to well up, and it felt good. Again, I was developing the perception of happiness which went alongside the feelings of loving kindness. It felt wonderful. And that allowed these feelings to get stronger and stronger, and I was getting happier and happier. You started to enjoy this. Because I was enjoying this, my mind didn't wander to other things. I did say, what am I doing this for? What time is it? When's lunch going to be? I started really get involved in this. And once it was strong, loving kindness was a little kitten, I could change it, change the object. You have these old things called fly projectors many centuries ago, it seems, where you could actually change the fly. And first, actually, what I did, I just changed the image there. Instead of a little kitten, it was actually, you know, somebody I knew, you know, say, like my mother or a best friend or something. Again, someone which was also easy to generate loving kindness towards, but, you know, which was a little bit harder. You start with the easy stuff and then work up to the harder, harder, harder. And so, a very close friend, someone, no, if you've got children, one of your kids, or you've got a little animal which you really love, your companion, put them up in front of you. Imagine them. It's amazing. Sometimes people think they can't imagine these things. That, you know, your imagination's not strong enough, it won't stay. But when you're having fun, you enjoy what you're doing, it's easy. The image stays there without hardly any effort at all, because the mind wants to do it. And then you have this little image of a best friend or someone who's very close to you. And then again, the same feelings which you have towards that little stray kitten, you build up towards, you know, say your mother or your child or someone very close to you. And then, you know, you're really not much different than that stray kitten. You know, even though you may be well fed, you still need kindness, you still need love, you still need friendship. And I give it to you. And I start saying things like that description of loving kindness, which my father said, the door of my heart will always be open to you. My dear friend, my child, my mother, my father, my best friend. Wherever you go in the world, or in other worlds, if you die, the door of my heart, no matter what you do, where you go, will always be open to you. There's someone very close to me. I give you my unconditional love, no matter who you are. And as you do these things, you feel this amazing inspiration, this piti sukha come up inside of you. And that makes you even more involved. And it's like a cause and effect. And you start getting sort of more and more soft, more and more kindness, more and more joy inside. And as you start to do these things, it's like this metaphor which I use is like lighting a fire. The fire gets stronger and stronger inside. When it's strong enough, you can actually put even a harder object up. Not just like a dear friend of yours, but just like an acquaintance, you know, who's, you know, you're reasonably close to, but not that close to. And you give it to them as well. If you start to get lose that feeling of loving kindness, go back to your little kitten. Or other things which people use is like little puppies or little babies. Or this one lady in one retreat some years ago, she didn't really like animals, and she didn't like babies either. So, you know, she was a bit lost for what to do. She said, I don't like kittens, I don't like puppies, I don't like babies. You know, they sort of scream and they wee and they just... I said, well, what do you do in your house? And he said, what do you like? And she said, well, I spend a lot of time doing is gardening. I said, okay, that's great. Imagine a little pot plant. And this little seedling. And this little seedling, I mean, it depends upon you. If you don't water it and look after it, that seedling will die. That, in a sense, is your little child. Or your love child. And so, imagine that little seedling. And just how much it needs you and how much pleasure it's going to give you when it grows into a little flower. And give it all your love and kindness. Little seedling, may you be happy and well. May you always get plenty of water. You know, may you get lots of sunshine. May you warm and may you grow into this beautiful flower. And, you know, sometimes when I say these things, people think I'm really crazy and I've gone loopy. But this lady was listening and she came afterwards and said that was the best meditation for the whole retreat. Because she started imagining this, exactly what I was saying, this little poplar, And she started sort of stroking it, and sort of her mind was just really urging it on. Oh, you beautiful pot plant. And she got blissed out, just on a pot plant. An imaginary one at that. So but this is actually, it doesn't matter what the object is, as long as it generates feelings of warmth and kindness. So you go back to that root object, you know, whether it's a poplar, baby, kitten, or whatever else it is, you can imagine, just to bring up these feelings of love and kindness. Because this actually is a very skillful means which bypasses many of the obstacles to loving kindness. May all beings be happy and well. No way, because you don't like all beings. May I be happy and well. Well, I like some of me, but not all of me. How am I going to do this? This is actually a beautiful way of doing it. To give it, make it more clear what I'm saying here, I use the metaphor of lighting a fire. If you're lighting a fire, what do? You put big logs on first of all, then light a match? No way will that fire take. You start using paper, usually, old newspaper, and a bit of like a few twigs. If you're lighting your barbecue or lighting fire, that's what you do. And paper takes the fire very easily. And once you've got the paper going, then the kindling, and the small twigs, and then bigger twigs, and then bigger twigs, and then bigger twigs. Once that fire is really going strong, then you can put on the wet logs. When you put on the wet logs, the heat is so great, it just dries out those logs, and even the wet logs take hold of the fire, and they're blazing. And this is a simile for loving kindness. So you start off with a little piece of paper, my little kitten. Actually, when you start doing this, it's because you get used to this, you've got this little imaginary kitten with you. Anytime you want to get loving kindness, you start on that, you know, little kitten, and you get it all going again very quickly because you're used to it. And then you can sort of get your fire going. It's like you've got matches and kindling with you all the time. And once it's sort of going very strong, all my friends, people close to me, and then you can actually start to put on the big logs. Your enemies, the people who really hurt you. They're your ex-husbands. Your ex-wives, the bosses, the people who have cheated you out of your wealth. You know, the policemen who hold up the radar gun and steal all your driving points. Whatever else it is you really hate. And you put these on the fire. And it surprises you. You can't believe it when it happens. Actually, you can give loving kindness and forgiveness to these people. The reason is because your fire is strong enough. But if you try and give loving kindness to your enemies when you're just trying to light a match and light a whole big log, no way, it will never work. You just get more and more frustrated and you think, I can't do loving kindness. Of course, one of your biggest logs is always yourself. That's only just a little bit less than your ex-husband, or your ex-wife, or your boss. You're really careful of that one, yourself. So don't try giving loving kindness to yourself at the beginning. It won't work. It'll be too hard. May I be happy and well. May I be happy and well. May I be happy and well. Sort of, but it doesn't really go deep. It comes up along the barrier. This is stupid. What am I doing this for? What you're saying is you're afraid to do that. You're not ready to do that. There's still sort of a resistance there. But if you do that later on, when the loving kindness is getting very strong, you've done kittens, you've done your best friends, you've done your mother, your kids, all your friends in the meditation group, and all the people who looked after this meditation retreat, all the beings that you've known and people who've liked you in the world, then put yourself in there. And if the feelings of loving kindness are extremely strong, it becomes easy. And you find that when you put yourself there, may I be happy and well, may I be free from suffering, I deserve happiness, just like that little kitten. Okay, I've made mistakes, so has that kitten, so has everyone else. But what I really, really, really need to say to myself, the door of my heart is open to me as well. No matter what I've ever done, I deserve that softness, that kindness. May I be really happy. Saying that to yourself at that stage, because the power is strong enough, it can overcome those obstacles and go deep inside you. What you're doing is you're opening up so many doors which make happiness, which make peace, which make joy, which make enlightenment possible. Because many of those hindrances are ill will based. Go so far, why don't you go further? Because you think you don't deserve it. Because you're not ready for it. Because basically you hate yourself.
At that deep level.
So when you actually do this, you can open up huge amounts of doors, you know, into the mind. But as you're doing this, to make sure the fire is always glowing, always actually have the object there, but now and again, come back to, you know, the thing which is watching again. Because you notice the thing which is watching all of this gets happier and happier and happier. There's a sort of an energy starts to build up. That kitty sukha, which I keep talking about. So if you want to use this meditation as a way of getting deep into the jhanas, rather than just solving the problem, being able to love yourself and love other beings in the world, when you get it deep, then actually, instead of all these objects out there, instead of actually the fuel, you look at the fire. Usually what happens when it gets very strong anyway, you can't see the fuel, because the fire is so strong in a big bonfire. You can't see whether it's coal in there, or whether it's wood, or whatever it is. Because the fire is so strong, and that's all you see, the flames. But if you start to experience the flames, the feeling of loving kindness, the essence of loving kindness, the same thing which you were pointing to when you said, love. But in a much stronger form, because you've built it up. That heat, that warmth, that power, that glow of loving kindness. Then when you focus on that, rather than the object, focus on where it's coming from, the feeling, the essence of loving kindness, what metta truly is. That becomes a powerful, beautiful object of attention. And there's no real need to force yourself onto that, because once you notice that it's so beautiful, it's very difficult to take your mind's attention away from that. And it's so wonderful, beautiful to feel this power of love inside of you. It's a very simple but strong object. And it is a very powerful magnet, and that draws you to it. And then you sort of, instead of having cats and husbands and all beings and politicians and insects and mozzies and cockroaches and all those sorts of things, you've just got this powerful love in front of you which you're watching. And it's so inspiring, it's so beautiful, that the mind very easily stays with it. And it's easy to sustain your attention on something which gives you so much happiness. It's like watching a TV, but it's better than any TV. Because it's really delighting you. And this is actually how people start to get into the metta jhanas. The jhanas which have their entrance to the path of metta. You focus on this beautiful energy, it becomes a beautiful golden light, really rich, so powerful. Your job really is the energy, is plenty there. The job to convert that into a jhana is just to still it. Because a lot of time that sort of love is just sometimes causes a bit of restlessness. It's just too bubbly. Just still it a little bit. And that puts in this beautiful nimitta, a nimitta of metta. And that will take you, it's very easy to absorb into that and take you into the jhana. Interesting that people sometimes ask, is like the jhanas which retain through metta any different than the jhanas attained through the breath? The answer is actually no. Jhana is jhana is jhana is jhana. Once you get into that jhana, it's exactly the same no matter which door you went into. But you'd always go out of that jhana through the same door you came into. So if you get into that jhana through metta, when you come out again, you come out through the metta door rather than the breath door into this building, using that as a metaphor. When you come out, so you have this amazing metta. And that's when you find, just after a jhana experience, then if you practice metta, may all beings are happy and well, then that spreads through the whole universe like a flash. You can zap people with loving kindness. Whack. You go, oh, that's nice. And that's when it really becomes fun, because that's when it's really powerful. And you can be sort of it's good to play around with things like that. That's what I've told a couple of people on this retreat. It depends how good your meditation is and how powerful loving kindness is. But sometimes, on a retreat, it's nice to spread loving kindness to someone very close to you. And like a husband or a wife or someone, if not, or a father or whatever. Or someone sick is a good friend. But when you do this, look at the clock. And remember, even note down, what day, what time of the day you gave loving kindness to this person. And then, next time you see them, you know, especially if it's only a few days' time, go and ask them, on Thursday afternoon, on Thursday morning, for 9:30, or 8:30, did you notice anything? Don't give them a leading question, but just ask them, notice anything. It's amazing how many times. I said, well, actually, you know, I was thinking of you at that time. Said, well, how are you thinking of me? I said, I felt so good about you, I really missed you, or I felt so warm as I was thinking of you. And I love to hear things like that, because it shows it actually works. But it's the other side of the world. And you spread loving kindness like that, it's extremely powerful. But you've got to have lots of energy to actually do that. Once when I was in Bunbury, just already mentioned once about that, but I was down in Bunbury and I was meditating down by the beach. It's in the afternoon, there's no one around again. And I just done a nice meditation. I first did some loving kindness meditation. And I saw this boy and girl, they were walking, just coming towards me, but I didn't bother about them. And I started doing this loving kindness meditation. I really got into it, you know, maybe for 20 minutes, half an hour. And I was just really so high. And when I came out after half an hour, with my eyes, they'd walk past this boy and girl, but they involved this passionate embrace. I was just wondering, what is my loving kindness? Because that's the enemy of loving kindness. That's the desire. It's very close there. So be careful, it's like unconditional. You just want another person to be happy. It doesn't matter what they do, where they go. Just be happy. Because that's what Ajahn Chah told the monks when he left them in England. He said, be careful of loving kindness. This is what he said to the monks. So, you know, he's got a great sense of humour, Ajahn Chah. He said, if you practice too much loving kindness, monks, you'll start having babies. That's what he told the monks. So, that's the danger there of loving kindness. But it's a very powerful, it leads into deep meditation. Now, that's actually loving kindness meditation straight. How you can use it to do wonderful things with your life. Use it as a meditation. It solves a lot of problems with your relationships and with people you hate. You can start putting big logs in. One thing I should actually say though is that practice of loving kindness, you know, if you have got enemies, you can't practice that loving kindness when you've got anger in the mind at the same time. So if you've got an enemy, you shouldn't wait until you're in front of them to practice loving kindness. You find it impossible. So that's why there's an old Chinese proverb which says, love the tiger, but at a distance. A beautiful proverb. What that means is that don't try and practice loving kindness when that person's in front of you. Practice, say, when you're on a retreat. And practice in the way of building up the steam, then getting that to a beautiful person. Because they do look beautiful when you get lots of loving kindness. So your enemy, put them in that fire of loving kindness. Do it when they're not around. Do it at a distance of time and space. So you may have to meet them next week sometime, but now's the time to do it. So when you sort of do lots and lots of loving kindness at a distance, you're actually training yourself, reconditioning yourself, brainwashing yourself if you like. When you see your enemy, it's amazing, your perception changes. Because of what you've done at a distance, the hatred and the anger don't come up in the first place. Loving kindness is a preventative. Once the disease is there, it doesn't work. It has to be done before. So always remember that one, because once anger is there, so loving kindness, it should be loving kindness, I can't be loving kindness. I deserve it. I should be. It makes you feel even more sort of frustrated. So do it at a distance. And it's amazing just how much it works. There was one of our monks, a little lucky kind of story now. He's now in Thailand, he's a very famous monk now, but he came to spend a year with us in Perth. And he's the one who sort of, you know, patted the king cobra on the head. But there's this particular type. You know, you've heard that story before in Singapore or another year. Have you? No, that's an old story. Okay. This is a powerful monk. You know, some of you saw him when we went to Thailand a long time ago. Sitting in the jungle in Thailand, and with a few other monks, just in the evening. Big sound, a big animal coming towards them, the king cobra. Now, I've actually seen a king cobra only once, and that was actually in Wat Nanachar. And you see those paths we go along in Wat Nanachar. So I couldn't see the head, I couldn't see the tail. It was just stretched along the path, and it was moving, and it was, you know, thicker than my thighs, and that's its body width. But the strange thing is that two or three times in my life as a monk, you knew that something was around. This, your sensitivity, before I saw it, something was happening in this monastery. It felt very strange, electric. I turned the corner, and there was this huge black thing across the path. And it kept moving and moving. And I was counting how many times it was moving. I wanted to find out how long it was. And about six or seven path widths before its tail came out. And that's huge length of a snake. And, you know, when I went back afterwards, I asked the villagers, so what is that? Black and long, said, oh, that's the king cobra. It's very rare to see them, but anyway, these are huge snakes. You know, they're serpents. And if they're sitting in the jungle, one of these came towards this monk. Came right up to him, opened his foot, the cobra, right in front of him. So what would you do? You can't run, these things are much faster than you. So all this monk did, so he stood there, he opened his eyes, and saw us, and he came up, patted it on the head. He said, thank you for coming to see me. And then he put his hands down. And the cobra never did anything. He was very happy to have his head patted, because it's such a rare opportunity to have head patted. You know, sometimes you have to give it a little scratch as well, you think it's sort of itchy. He patted it on the head, and so the cobra put his head down and went to go see another monk. And the other monk said, after, no way you could do that. Go back to Ajahn Gata, nobody. He was scared stiff. But no, the cobra never bit anybody. And that's actually the power of loving kindness, what you can do. You know, you can pat tigers. And none of these animals would ever hurt you if you've got so much loving kindness, you're just too soft. Now, I'm not up to that standard, but, you know, I'm pretty soft. And I remember going to this jail once, and this was a Canning Vale jail in Perth. That was the high security jail at the time. And they just put in these security systems. And they had these sensors all through the ceilings, and they gave you these little pens. They looked like an ordinary biro pen, but instead of having an ink cartridge in them, you press the top there, you point it at one of these sensors, starts initially, press the top, and the alarm will go off. They know exactly in the prison where you were, and all the guards will rush to save you. Because, you know, sometimes these prisoners could, you know, they can rape, they could kill, very quick. These are very hardened, violent men. So they were concerned for the security, not just the guards, but also the visitors. So they gave each one of them, they gave me one of these, and said, well, I don't know what to put. Well, that was the first problem. But anyway, I sort of had a little bag and sort of put it on the end of the bag and said, this is really, we just started doing this, it's a secret, don't tell anyone what this is, it's just a pen, okay? So as soon as I got into my meditation group, you know, the first thing they said, oh, you've got one of those as well. Everybody knew, this was crazy. So, you know, this prisoner who's come to my meditation classes, you know, for quite a while, I said, do you really think that you could have enough time to press one of those? And I looked at him and said, probably not, you could get me before I could even put my hand on that. He said, yeah, we could, very easy. But then he smiled and said, if any of these guys tried that, I'd get them first. He said, so we like you, and you're protected. And it's really nice actually to hear that from this really hardened prisoner. He had sort of gratitude, you know, to what the monks were doing. And he said, look, these guys here, they won't get close to you. That pen's no good, but I'll stop. That's just loving kindness, because when you see someone really soft, there's no way you can hurt them. Because you can't do it. There was another case of this Hindu guru many, many, many years ago. So I read it about 28 years ago, when I was first a monk. No, 35 years ago, when I was first a monk. He was walking through a very bad part of New York, and you know, a gang of hoodlums cornered him, and they wanted to mug him. You know, give us your wallet, Mac, they called him. really funny, it was just like 26 years old slang. Give us your wallet, Mac. And, you know, this little Indian fellow, you know, not very high, said, look, I'm a holy man, I don't have money. So don't give us that, Mac, give us your wallet or we'll knife you. And he sort of explained to them in a very soft voice, you know, he was a holy man, he lived very simply, he sort of didn't carry any money. He said it, well, after about 5 or 10 minutes, not only did these hoodlums let him go, but what was so fascinating is he said, I'm sorry, we've made a mistake, sir. They actually called him sir. And that was sort of, you know, written in the newspaper, and you know, just how weird that was, that these hoodlums would call anyone sir. And it's because of his loving kindness. He was basically invulnerable because of that. So loving kindness is great like that. And this one particular monk, Ajahn Gun, going back to the story, he had, again, first years of our monastery, and it's probably, people in Singapore would appreciate this, in Sydney and, you know, over here, how hard it is to get planning permission to do anything. Because you've got to fulfill all these criteria, put all your plans into the local council, the shire, the right authorities, and they say, well, this is not this way, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. And it takes a lot of time. And this one day, the mayor of the shire was visiting our monastery, just came in. He's actually a neighbour. And he came in a nice suit. This was an important person in the council. Basically, at that time, he was actually basically running the council. He'd been on it so long that he was Mr. Council, basically. And so he came in his suit, and so I thought we'd better be nice to this guy, because if we make any mistakes, no more building permission. That's the end of our monastery. And like many sort of Australians, huge stomach, you know, so there's just a lot of elbow bending went into that, and the pup, you know, too much beer. And so before I could stop this monk, this Thai monk, who couldn't speak hardly any English, went up to this important figure in our local community, fed up to him, looked at his stomach and started patting it. That's not what you're supposed to do to important members of the council. And as soon as he started, you couldn't stop it. It was patting and rubbing this top person's stomach. And straight away we thought, that's it, no more planning permission for us. You know, that we've really upset somebody. But the next thing you notice, after the, you know, we thought, oh no, what's going to happen next? This mayor of the council, you know, this nice, so important member of the community, never saw it like it before, anything like it before. His smile, he started gurgling like a baby. He loved every minute of it. It was a fascinating experience, because this monk had so much loving kindness, he just blasted this counselor and was rubbing his stomach and carry on, don't stop. And he became a great supporter of the monastery afterwards. So it's actually marvellous, actually, the power of loving kindness, what it can actually do. If you've got that sort of loving kindness, you can go up to anyone in the street and start patting. Oh, go. But if you haven't, you're in big trouble. So anyway, so that's the sort of things you can do with loving kindness. But also, if I run out of time, it's nice to be able to also combine that loving kindness with other aspects of your meditation. I like to combine it very often with the breath, having loving kindness on the breath. Beautiful breath. That's why I used the symbol before, looking at my breath as a baby, or as a little kitten. Now you're holding a nice little kitten. Because you enjoy holding the kitten or stroking it, you'll never drop it. How many times have you done this like I've done it? You've been meditating, and this stupid cat comes and sits on your lap, and you get yourself nice and comfortable. You want to watch your breath, and I mean, this is a nice cat. And so, you know, as soon as it gets on your lap, it starts licking this and licking that. And it starts to, you know, it disturbs your meditation. You think, oh, well, never mind, it's loving kindness meditation. And how often is it then you feel your legs start to ache, because it's been on a long time, but you don't want to move because you disturb the cat. When you're having loving kindness, you don't want to move, even though it hurts sometimes. The same with your meditation. If you have loving kindness towards the breath, you'll never let it go. Loving kindness, beautiful breath, wonderful breath, just like that lady doing with the plant. Beautiful plant, loving this breath backwards and forwards. Not only are you getting sustained awareness of this breath, but you're also straight away drawing out the beauty in this breath, because whatever you have love towards gives you happiness back. You let that cat sit on your lap, you get a lot of happiness back. Feels good. So you're getting past the dull breath, the ordinary breath. And that's, some of you have lost that awareness because you get into this dull breath and you go into peacefulness, but it's not beautiful enough. It hasn't got the energy. But you can't get deeper in the meditation. To get that beauty in the breath, loving kindness on the breath works straight away. And any possibility of ill will, I don't like this, I don't want this, completely disappears. It also gives you contentment. You're just happy. Okay, you might want to go deep into meditation, but I'm with the cat now, that's good enough. Because of that contentment, that loving kindness, it's embracing the moment. Loving kindness embraces, brings towards you. It goes in. It's a part of meditation. Embracing this moment, no matter what it is, instead of trying to push it away. I want the next moment. This moment's not good enough. This moment's only moment. I want the jhana moment. This moment, embrace that moment with loving kindness. You stay there, it becomes silent. People who love each other a lot are content with each other. They don't need to speak. Old people, I've never seen this with a few people, old people who've lived together for so long and they're not sort of fed up with each other, but are content with each other. They're in the house together, they hardly ever speak to each other. Because they don't need to. They're content. I looked at that metaphor in my own mind. A lot of times when you think, it's because it's a problem. You're not content. When you speak, it's because it's a problem. When there's no problem, no speaking. So, when you have that loving kindness there, it actually encourages the silence as well. Just slightly gazing into the nice warm eyes of the breath. No need for any words. Or with the breath itself, just, you love the breath so much it just stays. So it goes in, it embraces the moment. It doesn't matter what type of breath it is, if it's uncomfortable, if it's this way or that way, it doesn't matter, because it's unconditional loving kindness. The door of my heart is open to your breath, no matter what you ever do. Come in. It makes mindfulness happen, it makes this joyful mindfulness, it becomes so easy to get deep meditation. So any stage of your meditation, whether you're watching the breath or you're doing the recollection of all your good qualities, you can always develop that loving kindness, because it stills the mind, brightens the mind, embraces the object. And that's what we're supposed to be doing. So that loving kindness is a powerful tool. The practice of the loving kindness in daily life, this is where you have to be careful. I was saying last night, the loving kindness, may I be happy and well, works very much well, because it gives you that peace, it gives you that stability, it gives you that joy. But when you come out afterwards, loving kindness practice can be very confusing, because if it hasn't got wisdom, may these beings be happy and well, but how do I make them happy and well? That question about disciplining children, my child be happy and well. Does that mean I have to let them do what they want to do? Is that how they can be happy and well? This is where compassion without wisdom always gets extremely confusing and never reaches the goal of really giving a person happiness. So, happiness, the loving kindness, is great up to that point. and to get to deep meditation, to solve a few of the problems, but to get the big problem solved, the enlightenment problems, real freedom, loving kindness is not enough. So please know what loving kindness can do, and know its limits. And after a while, that loving kindness can generate peace, which can generate insight, which gives you the wisdom. So then afterwards, once wisdom is strong, then you know how to apply loving kindness. Not only do you have the wish, may all beings be happy and well, but you also know how they can be happy and well, and what happy and well really means. So be careful about the practice of loving kindness when it hasn't got wisdom supporting it. In particular, there's one last thing which is almost on loving kindness. It's one of these important little attitudes to meditation, which is very good, very important. I said this to one or two people during the interviews. There was a story from the Chinese Art of War, a very famous book, where they were talking to a general who, in the Imperial Armies of China, had the best discipline in his troops, in the whole army. And they wanted to find out how this general managed things so he's got such discipline. And this is relevant here because we're, in one sense, trying to discipline the mind. What's the present moment? What's the breath? Be still. Have you got good discipline in your mind? Is your gatekeeper working? How do you get perfect discipline in your mind? How do you get a gatekeeper that always does what you tell it to? Because you're the general, and your gatekeeper is the truth. And the answer was very, very profound. At first it was like the stupid answers, but these stupid answers, you've got to examine them to get their deeper meaning. This general said that I've got perfect discipline in my troops because I only tell them what they want to do. That's why they always follow orders. I didn't tell them what they want to do. That's why they follow orders. And of course you think, it's obvious, isn't it? Because if you tell them to sleep in the morning, they'll follow orders. You tell them to eat a lot, soldiers love eating. You tell them to go off down to the pub, they love to do that. So what are you actually telling them? Surely that won't work. How can you tell soldiers to go into battle? Who likes to go into battle? How can you tell them to get up early in the morning to train? Who likes trading? Who likes working? And you saw that the answer to that question was that that general had motivated, brainwashed, or whatever you call it, those troops, to want to get up early in the morning, to want to go into battle, to want to work, to want to train. That's how, when he told them to train, they already wanted to do it. Call it motivation, if you like. You call it loving kindness if you want, whatever you do, but that motivation, so you actually want to watch the breath. And you want to be peaceful. You want to be free. So you can tell these things right with loving kindness, not with hatred. So that loving kindness is actually brainwashing yourself. And that's what I've been doing all week so far. Brainwashing you to want to watch the breath. But if you brainwash yourself to want to watch the breath because you think it's such a wonderful thing to do, so useful thing to do, or to want to do loving kindness, it's so beautiful. Then as soon as you tell the mind, okay, do some loving kindness meditation, straight away, does it. If you tell the gatekeeper to be in the present moment, that gatekeeper will follow orders as long as he or she just loves to watch the present moment. So you've got to also to bring that joy, that happiness, that love of doing these things. Isn't it wonderful to be in the present moment? If you brainwash yourself that way, you love being in the present moment, you really enjoy it, then when you tell the gatekeeper, okay, present moment, hey, whoopee, great. It's like taking the dog out for a walk in the evening. Then I have to force the dog out and pull it, so come on, go for a walk. Well, I don't want to go. The dog leads you because it loves to do it. So your mind, like a little dog, train it so it loves to go to meditation retreats. Loves just to sit down meditation and just watch the breath. Loves it. Can't get enough. And that's how you get the discipline in the mind. And that's also how you get your discipline in whatever else you have to do in life. You have to go to work when you leave here. Love your work. Have that loving kindness towards it. Work, the door of my heart's open to you as well. Thank you. It gives me an opportunity to serve the world. And then you can really love your work, and you have to brainwash yourself into doing this. There's no problem at all. As all the things which I didn't like doing in my life, I brainwash myself to like doing them. You can always find something good. Even like going to the dentist. Because I brainwash myself to like going to the dentist. And the way I did it is because when I go to the dentist, the chairs in the dentist are so much more soft and comfortable than anything we've got in the monastery. You know these nice chairs, you just lie all about, you press the button. They're really comfortable. And secondly, this dentist puts all these things in my mouth. And so it's so nice, I can't speak. No one can ask me any dumber questions. So I can really be quiet for a change. Ah, bliss. So I look at those positive attitudes to go to the dentist. And so it's a great rest, relax. You can do whatever you want to my mouth, I'm just going to relax. So when you like doing these things, you have to do anyway, you put love into it, you put kindness, put joy into it. It's easy to do. You're just telling your truth to do what they wanted to do. That's how you try and get disciplined in the monastery. Trying to brainwash the monks seems to like doing these things. It's easy to do because a lot of things you do in the monastery are nice to do. Or at work. You've got to motivate the people underneath you. Give them a reason actually to work. Motivate them. You know, this is really worthwhile doing. Whatever else it is. And once you do that, and it's easy to tell them, you know, we need to sort of work on Saturday. Oh, great, can't wait, thanks very much. So the great general is the one who only tells their troops what they want to do. So if your gatekeeper is not doing what you tell it to do, ask yourself, does your gatekeeper want to do that? If it doesn't want to do that, you're missing an important instruction. Understand? Okay. So, is there any questions about what I've just been talking about?
Can loving kindness be given to somebody who has already gone? Meaning that your mom or anybody can be in another realm.
Yeah, you can give to anybody anything in this world. Now, whether they receive it or not is another question. But because you give loving kindness, it's important for you. So if you give that loving kindness, even if they're beings which are no longer here and they're so far away they can't receive that loving kindness anymore, it doesn't matter, it's good to give it anyway. Because you get so much back.
Okay. And another thing is you said loving kindness should be done first with others than yourself. But I was told that if you don't do it to yourself, then it's the loving kindness that you can give.
Very easy. Many people hate themselves, but they love kittens. So in theory, they might say, yeah, it's not possible, but it is possible, we know that. A lot of people can love others. They have a hard time loving themselves. But to fully develop that loving kindness, you also, somewhere along the track, have to include yourself. Otherwise, it's not fulfilled. So the way to do that is, again, you know, if you go to one of sort of study sociology or history or math or something, you don't just go straight to university. You've got to start primary school first of all, go to high school, then you go to university. You just can't handle those big subjects. And you are a big subject. It's an easy one, first of all.
So you start with yourself?
No, self is a hard one. How many people love themselves?
Because you can't love yourself after you love others.
Very easily. People do that. I think you can love kittens, you can love little plants, because they don't challenge you, kittens. They don't talk back. So it's easy to do those sort of things. Practice on those first of all. Maybe logically you say, oh, it can't work out, but you know, sometimes you hate all this logic and reason. You do it. How many of you, honestly, sort of, you know, love a cat or a dog or love your kid? A lot of you do that. But how many really love yourself? Really hard to do.
Mum, but I love myself and I start
everything. You try to love yourself, but then why are you so hard on yourself? How many of you are here that are sitting down and your legs are aching, your back is aching? That shows you don't love yourself. And I keep saying, all these chairs, there's not always a chair empty there. If you really love yourself, you go and sit down. You're kind to yourself, you're gentle to yourself, you want to push yourself because you hate where you are now, you want to be over there. That's hating yourself. Present moment. I don't really want to be in the present moment. I'm with someone else. That's hating yourself. I'm not good enough. Oh, I feel so depressed. No, I haven't had a good meditation this morning. That's hating yourself. But if you had a child and had a terrible day at school, if you love a child, say, never mind. But mum still loves you. Can you do that to yourself? Had a terrible meditation. Or you sweat tears and it's really awful. Can you do that to yourself? You know, never mind. I still love me. That's all you mean by loving yourself. So you have to be highly enlightened to really have that self acceptance. Okay, yes. One last question, individual.
Can you have something
kind of people that? It does. That's the danger of it. That's why I've been charged too much loving kindness to have babies. That's his way of saying that. So that's the danger of loving kindness. So that's why sometimes it's good actually to go to, instead of the object of loving kindness, to just go to the feeling of loving kindness. And that sort of bypasses the problem of attachment. It's a danger, but it's still, the benefits far outweigh the dangers. Okay, that's enough for today, folks.